This podcast is brought to you by Radio Reverb. If you like what you hear, please support us by donating online at radioreverb.com.
The What's the Crack podcast with Anthony Martin.
Listen in live weekly on Brighton's Radio Reverb.
See whatsthecrack.co.uk and radioreverb.com for showtimes.
In the past 18 months, they've opened for Guns N' Roses in front of 80,000 people. At Slane Castle, they've toured with the Amazons and the Dead Kennedys, went to number 2 in the Irish album charts with their debut album, and they've performed in Brighton twice already. Well, the Irish band Other Kin are coming back to Brighton on the 29th of October for a headline gig at the Hope and Ruin. And joining me on the phone right now is Luke from the band. Hello, Luke.
Hello. How are you?
Yeah, good. What a year and a half.
It's been a blast. I mean, yeah, I feel like we've been playing so many gigs and been all around the place. And yeah, it's just been amazing. It's just been everything we've sort of ever wanted when we started the band, really.
Yeah, and the album going to number 2, the debut album going to number 2. That's fantastic. Congratulations on that.
Thanks a million. Yeah, we didn't expect it at all because I suppose a few weeks before the album came out, we'd heard that Shania Twain is putting out her album, Miley Cyrus, Wolf Alice. Even I remember at one point hearing that Michael Jackson was putting out a reissue or something.
Wow.
And, you know, basically they were all forewarnings that we would be boned in the charts. But we put in the elbow grease and it paid off, you know. Like, number 2 is something we definitely didn't expect. We didn't even think cracking the top 5 would be a realistic option. But we did it.
Well, in fairness, as you said, beating Shania Twain, Miley Cyrus and Demi Lovato, like, that is insane, considering the power they have behind them in terms of press and brand recognition. That's fantastic.
Mm. Yeah, I would have expected Shania Twain would have just stormed it. I know she went to number 1 in the UK, and Ireland is, you know, a massive, you know, this is, I suppose, the whole Garth Brooks fiasco proved how popular country pop music is in Ireland. But I guess they just weren't buying her CDs.
Well, between you and me and no one else, I think that proves Ireland possibly has a better taste in music, maybe.
yeah, exactly.
So how did you celebrate it anyway? You must have had quite a shindig after getting the chart results through.
Yeah, I think on the day we found out, we had a rare day off on our tour. So we were in the UK, we were in a farmhouse in a place called Yeldersley. And yeah, we had a day off. And I think we just, you know, our driver managed to get some Tesco or Aldi brand Deco balls, and that was used as the, I suppose, as the celebration, the toasting of the album going number 2. And I can't remember actually what we did that night. Jeez, that tour was a bit of a blur anyway, so. Well, forgive me for my poor memory.
That's a good sign. That is possibly a very, very good sign if you don't remember it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was a good night, anyway. That's all I'll say.
So let's talk about the album, because it feels like it's been a very, very long time coming, because you guys got together back in 2013. When did you feel you had nailed the 12 songs for this record?
I don't know. You never really feel like there is a point where you're completely ready. Like, I remember we booked the studio time maybe as early as midsummer last year. So we booked the studio time in anticipation that we would have at least maybe 16 songs that we would be willing to record. And at that time, you know, we had about 16 songs, but whether or not they were going to be the 16 songs that we're going to record was another matter. And even as close as up to maybe 2 weeks before we actually went into the studio, we wrote about 3 songs that eventually ended up on the album. So it was never really a case of, okay, these are the songs we'll record and we will do this in 2 months' time. Mm. It was literally anything that we had prepared or floating around right up until at least a week before the album was in contention for being recorded. It's one of those things. It's kind of like, I guess, painting, a painting. You never really feel like you're truly complete with it. And I suppose you just have to get to a point where you're satisfied with it, and that's what we did. We recorded 16 songs and we chose what we felt was the best 12 to represent how we wanted to present the album to people, and that's what we arrived at.
And what was your approach kind of in the studio then, because you guys, you know, when you're performing live, there's a lot of raw energy in the songs. How did you kind of How did you infuse that in the studio setting?
We tried to do that as much as we could. I mean, we recorded in a relatively small studio shed hybrid thingy. So there wasn't really enough room for us to all track it live together. So what we did was we did the bass and drums live together. And then myself and Connor, the guitarist, we'd stand in the studio control room with everyone around us and all our pedals, and we'd play the, you know, the bass and drum tracks full blast and just rock out along to them. So it was pretty live in that sense. It was very, it was a lot about the performance and the little kind of the minor imperfections that you get from playing songs live. That sometimes, I suppose, captured the essence of the song more so than if you're being really clinical about it and sitting down and, you know, playing the exact notes. Like, we left a lot of blemishes in there because they just have that unique sonic quality that you just stumble across. You know, you can't really necessarily replicate it. But a lot of the tracks from the album were done in that sense. So I think that's why when you listen to it, it sounds like really punchy and very, very much like it's the four of us in a room together, because it kind of is, to the best of how we could do it. And I think we managed to replicate the live feeling of the songs into the album.
And did you kind of go back and re-edit quite a lot, or did you kind of remaster a lot of the songs, or were you kind of, I suppose, after the recording session, were you quite happy with what you'd captured?
Yeah, we were quite happy. I mean, there's minimal overdubs on the album too. I mean, the only probably overdubbing was, harmonies that I would do throughout certain songs, but that was really it. I mean, we put down the basic guitar tracks, and then we'd probably record other guitar tracks over it just to make it sound heavier. I suppose it's overdubbing in a way, but not really. It's just we wanted to, you know, we play the existing parts over and over again so that when you hear it come out of your massive speakers, it sounds, you know, huge. So, yeah, I mean, even when we had the full recording done, we sent it off for mixing with this guy called Jolyon Thomas, who, you know, he's mixed, like, say, Royal Blood's albums. I think he produced their latest album. And, he just kind of added, I suppose, a bit more heft to the mixes and a bit more dynamics and all those other wonderful magic things that mixers do that mere mortals cannot do. And then that was it. Then we thought it sounded fantastic, and we just got it mastered, and now it's out.
See, you mentioned him mixing it, 'cause he's also mixed for Brighton's British Sea Power and the Magic Gang as well. How did that hookup come about? Did you pick him specifically with a certain kind of sound in mind, or a certain kind of mix design that you wanted?
Yeah, it was actually our label A&R guy who initially floated the idea of doing it with him. And, you know, I'd heard his name before. I'd obviously listened to records that he'd done before, but I didn't realize he'd be somebody who would be in contention to mix our stuff. And he actually, I suppose our relationship with him began, he mixed our the most recent EP we did for the album, The New Vice. And that's when it all kicked off, and we locked him in for the album then, which was probably pretty fortunate timing, because I think immediately after he started work on the U2 album.
Wow.
So I'd say if we caught him a few months later, he would have been a bit outside of our budget.
Wow.
But yeah, that's how it began. We were just given a list, I suppose, of the albums he had done, and it kind of matched with the sort of the sonic landscape that we had in mind for the album. And it was just a perfect fit. I mean, you know, usually when you're getting mixes done, you'll get like 5 or 6 mixes back until you're happy with it. But with him, it was pretty much 1 or 2 most times.
Wow. So you were pretty much in sync together then, yourselves and him?
Yeah, definitely. I think he just understood the sound that we wanted to go for, you know? And I mean, it is a relatively simple sound. It's, the album is a lot about, I suppose, the heft or the punchiness of it. And once, I suppose, he tweaked that, it was probably relatively easy for him to understand where the rest of the album should go in terms of mixing. Mm-hmm. And he just nailed it straight away, really. Like, we couldn't have asked for better.
Cool. Now, the album itself is called OK. What was the thinking behind that?
It's actually funny because we got an interview recently from, I think, a Dutch website, and they asked us pretty much the same question, but they said, so the album OK, what was the thinking behind that? Or was it just that you had no imagination left? which I presume was the Lost in Translation thing, but if not, it's hilarious anyway. No, it was basically, I suppose OK is what we've used as the abbreviation for Other Kin since we chose the name Other Kin. And, all of our album covers feature the OK hand gesture being made. Mm. And it was just something simple and striking that we thought represents the album best. We didn't want to go down the route of, you know, calling it the emancipation of, you know, Frederick the 17th or something, you know, really long-winded and pretentious. We just thought, look, this is a simple way of presenting the album. It's about the songs anyway. Yeah. And that was the thinking behind it, really. Yeah. And we actually left ourselves, I suppose, in a bit of as an easy target for critics to just be like, you know, okay, yeah, only okay. especially considering the last song of the album was called So So. But nobody's really taken that on and destroyed it with it so far. So happy days.
Now, the tattoo on the album sleeve, it's for people who haven't seen it, perhaps, it's got an arm with the album title, OK, basically, on someone's arm. Whose arm is that?
That's actually my arm.
Right. And is it
on the album cover? Yeah.
Real tattoo?
Real tattoo, yeah. I can send you a picture now if you want. I suppose you have it already if you have the album. It's a real tattoo. So basically, what we were doing in advance of the album was that our first single, Bad Advice, was also going to be, well, it also was a tattoo. Mm. So our drummer, Rob, he has countless tattoos, and he got that done on his forearm. And we also had the idea to get the OK tattooed on our wrists as well. So he got his left wrist done and I got my right wrist done. And just to give us options in terms of, you know, it being a left arm and a right arm. And so we got inked up. We got a tattoo guy over to our house who's made of our drummer Rob, and he set up his workstation in our front room, and we got inked.
It's a good job you didn't go for the emancipation of Frederick the 16th. That might have taken up a bit of time and a bit of arm.
Exactly, yeah, I would have had to go. I probably wouldn't have been able to do it on my wrist anyway, let's say that.
the whole length of your arm or whole length of your leg, yeah, you'd have to look at that.
Exactly,
good.
Yeah. It's good. All over my chest and abdomen.
I mentioned earlier on about you guys supporting Guns N' Roses at Slane Castle. Now, that must have been insane.
Yeah, it was just surreal. I'm from Slane myself. I've been to so many Slane concerts throughout the year and always, I suppose, had that pipe dream of one day playing it. I suppose we got to, and it was just an incredible day. I mean, it was, you know, the biggest stage in Ireland, really, and the bands that we were playing with were just incredible bands too, which we were really happy about. You know, sometimes it's a massive occasion and you can be playing with bands that you're not into, but we, you know, the bands, I couldn't have dreamed of better bands to be playing it with. And it was just an incredible day. I mean, it's so hard to put into words. It was just everything caught up in it, you know, sentimentality, nostalgia, just the sort of overwhelming event of it all. And we just had an amazing day. It was an absolute blast.
And with things like that, you know, so people have support bands at such big gigs. Do you get to kind of mingle much with Guns N' Roses, or did you get to mingle much with them?
Yeah, we didn't actually get to meet Guns N' Roses at all.
Right, okay.
Because they only flew in about maybe half an hour before they were due to be on stage.
Right, okay.
And when they did arrive backstage, you know, it was you know, it was the kind of thing that you weren't really allowed to see them. But we got to hang out with Royal Blood and Mark Lanigan a bit. Cool. And Royal Blood were the sweetest guys. I think they're Brighton guys, actually.
Yeah, 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 from the neck of the woods, yeah.
Yeah, and they were lovely guys, I got to say. And even Mark Lanigan watched a bit of our set and was talking to our drummer afterwards. So you do get to mingle the odd time. Remember when we played with Chili Peppers? We were hanging out with Cage the Elephant and Patrick Stump from Fall Out Boy for ages. He's actually the nicest guy ever. My God. Yeah, so, I mean, it kind of depends on the event. But sometimes you'll end up finding yourself, I don't know, having dinner with some crazy famous person that, you know, you definitely wouldn't have just encountered on the street. Yeah, so I guess it varies between event and event, you know?
Yeah, well, this kind of is the whole thing of touring, really, isn't it? You kind of, I suppose, as you're going along, not only are you performing, but you're picking up new skills and things as you gig more and more. I saw you here last year at The Great Escape, and I was with a friend, and you were downstairs at the latest music bar, and wow, it was seeing a band perform to the crowd and being there in the moment. It's rare enough. It's rare enough, and you guys absolutely nailed it. Now you've done a lot of gigs since then. How far do you think your performances have come on since then? Do you think?
Like since then, I suppose, like that was kind of the beginning of us understanding how we wanted to carry ourselves on stage, because it's one of those things that, you know, when you are initially in a band, nobody tells you how you should act on stage.
Yeah.
You really have to kind of find it out for yourself. And, you know, you can learn from watching other bands and seeing other front men or front women and kind of, I suppose, learning or observing what they do and kind of building your stagecraft around that. But, I remember Brighton last year was the beginning of when we had a strong sense of how we wanted to carry ourselves on stage. So since that point, I mean, even then it's come on leaps and bounds. I mean, we can actually play our instruments better now. But also in terms of us understanding how to put on a show for people and how to... A big thing for us is to get people engaged with the performance itself, and not just have this as sort of audience band dynamic where there's a, you know, a wall between the two. We like to blur that wall and make sure that there's no distinction between the two. So, I mean, if you come to a show of ours in the coming months, which I suppose you might do because we're coming to Brighton,
yeah.
You know, hopefully you get the chance to see how much we've come on, because, you know, it's just a sweaty, raucous, rowdy affair, and that's the way we like it. I mean, we just leave everything on stage. I know it sounds cliche, but, you know, God, the amount of times we come off stage and I've done stuff to my ribs, or we're bleeding, or just absolutely, you know, shattered.
Yeah.
I guess that's part of why we do it. We love just putting on that kind of show.
Yeah. You're on tour at the moment. You've added more gigs as well, UK gigs. And looking at the tour itself, you're performing nearly every night straight through to December. How good has it been so far? Now that the album is out and people are getting familiar with your song list,
it's been great. I mean, when we kicked off the album tour, we had done a few Irish shows to kind of celebrate the release of the album, and they were incredible. We did one at Whelan's upstairs, which was kind of a secret gig. You know, I'm putting that in really commas because it wasn't really that secret at all. And that was just incredible, because I don't know if you've been in that upstairs room, but it's really tiny.
Yeah.
It's very low ceiling. Mm. It was packed with people, and the air was like just so, I guess because the amount of people there, it was so hot and just dense, and I could barely breathe on stage. I remember, like, for a good few parts of the set, I actually had to limit my movement because I was like, I cannot get enough air in.
Wow.
And I'm going to, like, pass out here. Yeah, it was I've never experienced anything like it. It was an incredible gig. And then we started our UK tour with In Heaven, and we did a good few Northern dates. We did about 7 dates with them in total, and they were great, really good band. Good shows, good crowds. And now we're home for a few days, and we're going to head back to the UK on the 22nd, do a few more of our own dates there, and then we're heading off to do pretty much all of Europe. And we can't wait. It's going to be a blast. I mean, that's probably all of our favorite things about touring or about being in a band is the touring and getting to see new places. So, yeah, we're really looking forward to those days.
And you've got a gig coming up in London at the Camden Assembly on the 26th of October. But you're looking for a band to open, and you've put it out on Facebook. I love the idea of this. So what's the story behind this? You're looking for a band for that night, is it?
Yeah, looking for a band for that night. Basically, I suppose, whenever we when our shows are booked or whatever, quite often there'll be the promoter of each individual show saying, okay, I have this band on, or who I'd like to put on the show, and we'll have a listen and say, okay, this is the band we like, and we'd like them to play with us or whatever. But for London, it was just, you know, there wasn't necessarily any band that had been put forward, and we thought instead of us just, like, I suppose asking a London band who are mates with to do the show, we may as well put it out on Facebook and see if there's any kind of young, upcoming bands who, you know, obviously because London is such a difficult gigging scene in the sense that there's something on every night and it's probably hard to get people to come to shows. We figured we may as well just put it out on Facebook, see if any young band wants to play with us in London. And yeah, we're actually surprised by the response. I mean, it's probably, last time I checked, there was almost around 350 comments on the status.
Wow.
So yeah, we went through loads of comments there earlier, had listened to a few bands, and I think we signed the one, and we'll probably just let them know in the next few days.
Sweet.
That they're, I suppose, playing with us, and yeah, looking forward to doing it with them. They're a good band.
That's a great idea. That's such a good idea. Such a kind of such an opportunity for a new band, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully, yeah. So it's like, you know, if people went to the trouble of posting their name on our status, you know, hopefully that means that they're looking forward to doing the gig or whatever. Or they, you know, I don't know, just looking forward to playing with them, because the band that we found are really good. And yeah, as you say, it's a good opportunity for any young band who might find it difficult to get gigs in what's a really difficult environment for bands. And, you know, hopefully we can guarantee them that there'll be a few people down to see their gig.
Well, listen, you're coming to Brighton again on the 29th of October. I'm going to it. I can't wait to go to it. It's Sunday the 29th of October at the Hope and Ruin.
Happy days.
Yeah, that's it. Best of luck with it. And listen, best of luck with the rest of the tour. If people want to find out more, they can check you out on social media. The username is OtherkinOK, which is also the name of the debut album, which is out now to buy anywhere and everywhere. And listen, Luke, thanks very much for chatting again.
Yeah, thank you, man. It's great to chat to you again.
You've been listening to a Radio Reverb podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review, and to hear more podcasts like this, check out RadioReverb.com.